Unlock the power of your mind. This is Provocative Enlightenment with Eldon Taylor.
Welcome, and thank you for joining us today. This is an hour devoted to learning something more, not just about the world of shoes and ships and sealing wax, but about how, what, and why we believe as we do. An hour for the open-minded, willing to challenge some of those old ideas behind what we think we know, who we are, and who we might just become. I'm Eldon Taylor, and this is Provocative Enlightenment. All right, our chat room is open, and you can log on by going to eldentaylor.com/chat, where my partner, Ravinder, and her team will greet you. Now, we have a new segment based on your letters. So, Ravinder, the segment, Question of the Week, we're being asked to share something of interest that we dealt with this last week. So, take it away.
Yeah, we always have something interesting coming along, and having the chance to share that is kind of cool. I think the most interesting one this week was an email that you received, I think, where the person said that her and her husband both heard their daughter calling. Now, the daughter wasn't there. She's somewhere. I think she was over in Florida, I think. Mm-hmm. But they both heard her call daddy at the same time. And the woman who emailed you was a bit spooked out about it. You know, what did it mean, whatever? And you'd replied her and said, you know, it could be a premonition. It could just be that she was thinking of them, but it was definitely a parapsychological event. I thought that was kind of cool, because that is definitely evidence of something more. You asked her to, you know, check off with her daughter and get back to you, and I think she did, and said that her daughter had just been thinking of her dad at the time. But to be that tuned in to another person, you know, is definitely signs of, you know, there is more to life than shoes and ships and sealing wax.
You know, you and I, well, one of our projects that we're working on is, of course, what we call The River. And and that's based on Siddhartha, Hermann Hesse's Pulitzer Prize-winning book, where, you know, after doing everything that you might think one should do to become spiritually enlightened, that is going through an ascetic process, asceticism, severe asceticism indeed, you know, even meeting the Buddha. What Siddhartha, the character in Hesse's novel, finally ends up doing is serving as a guide on a river and just allowing his life to reveal itself to him. And in that process, he discovers what enlightenment is. And so you and I, we kind of model things around our current project, around what is the river for everybody? You know, because, you know, we all have different rivers. How do we live into ourselves? How do we allow life to unfold? And sometimes we've talked to people, events of this nature are the very trigger mechanism that cause them to stop, to pause, to check out of that, you know, ping pong life, caught between mallets, racing here, going there, blah, 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 to look at what the meaning of life is, to look just a little bit beyond the traditional mechanistic scientific models of today. Well, anyway, that is a very interesting one.
I find it fascinating.
It very, very much so. Kelly, all right. Now, every week, I read some of your letters as our way of paying respect to the very important role you play in making this show successful. Last week, our show featured Peter Calhoun, and we discussed modern shamanism and awakening the cities. Jonathan commented, interesting show. I would like to see Mr. Calhoun do the things he is talking about. Not that I doubt him. It's just a matter of changing beliefs and accepting that these things are possible. Now, you know, Jonathan, Peter offers to do just that. You can go to his website. You can attend one of his seminars. You can journey with him into the wilderness, if you will, and learn to be a shaman. He offers to show you firsthand exactly what you are saying you want to see. Callie wrote, I've always felt there has to be a way to transform negative energy instead of using a negative to get rid of a negative. Mary wrote, Peter Calhoun is one of my favorites. Sam wrote, Hi, Eldon. I've listened to you with interest via Hay House. Really appreciate the work you do. Marco wrote, Love Eldon Taylor on Provocative Enlightenment on Hay House Radio. Well, thank you, Marco. Remember to at a distance, love Ravinder too. Tanko wrote, thank you for brightening up humanity. You are doing an extremely interesting job. I find that interesting comment, but thank you, Tanko. Now, if you haven't yet signed up to receive my free newsletter, please do. This last issue received many comments. Barbara wrote, Dr. Taylor, I know that this session was at least worth $200. If only my insurance covered this soul-filling article. I must tell you, I've been ingesting your messages since I purchased Mind Programming in 2009. Stay well and be blessed. A nice letter. Kimberly wrote, wow, this article is amazing. Really summed up life in a simple form that hit the nail on the head with my recent experiences. Eldon is so smart and has had such an impact on my life. Are there hands-on workshops he offers to apply and experience what he teaches? I love his work. You know, well, Kimberly, thank you, first of all. And for all of you, the answer is yes. Indeed, the next in-person workshop will be in Sandpoint, Idaho in October. And Ravinder has all the details. You can check with my office to get a schedule of the events, for that matter. Now, that said, if you can, please plan to attend the Hay House I Can Do It conference in November. There I will be leading a five-hour workshop that I know can change your life, adding a level of empowerment that many cannot even guess exists. The details are on my website as well as the Hay House site. I have really loaded this one up, so if you can, again, please do attend. You have any comments on that one, Ren?
That one's going to be a really cool one because you, I mean, I've looked at some of your presentation for that one. That one's going to be jam-packed. It's going to be in-depth. It's going to have its shock and awe.
Yeah, and you want them to go away with, you know, right now,
definite
usable.
Tools.
That's right. All right. Irene wrote, just started reading your book, Mind Programming. I am so very excited to finally have a guide to use in getting to know how my mind works and practicing truly being awake rather than just being manipulated and asleep and not even knowing it. Sheepy, that's what we call them around here, Irene, and congratulations. It's not all that easy to wake up. Moving on, Beth wrote, I received my first InnerTalk order. I have listened to a new one each day. Stunning response. Ron wrote, your InnerTalk subliminals are awesome and they work. Doreen wrote, I have listened to the CD on guilt and for the first time in 5 years, I can think about my mother without a lot of grief and sadness for things I thought I should have done. I finally feel unburdened. Well, good for you, Doreen. Angela wrote, Dear Eldon, I am a Brit living in Australia, and I have bought several of your CDs. I scoured the internet for information on subliminal products before coming across your wonderful website. It was so informative and factual, numerous products and titles that I knew I had to purchase from you, and I haven't been disappointed. I bought for my children and me and play the CDs in all our bedrooms all night. I also have the Brain Entrainment DVDs. The results have been nothing short of amazing. The children have improved at school. I have gained confidence in my ability to start a business. And last but not least, my hair has stopped falling out. This last one really astounded me as my hair had started thinning since puberty. I had never regained the thickness I had when I was a young girl. It took about 4 to 5 months before I noticed that my hair loss was reducing and I hadn't started exercising or changing my diet at all. To be honest, I didn't think the Freedom from Hair Loss CD would work. So it goes to show that it doesn't matter what your conscious mind thinks as long as you listen to the CD. Thank you for offering your wonderful products to the world. I intend to make further purchases and recommend you to everyone I know. Well, congratulations, Angela, and thank you for sharing. You know, that's a very interesting letter. It reminds me of, you know, so many things that the mind has direct control or influence over. How we handle stress is something that, you know, everybody understands. I can internalize that, and it can affect my immune and my endocrine, my ANS. But at the same time, it affects a lot of things other than that. This hair loss program isn't about, you know, male pattern baldness. It's about the kind of hair loss that comes about when we're living a stressed out life,
yeah.
when we're not, you know, even properly perhaps grooming as we should, but mostly it's about the stress and how it impacts our life. You know, it's the same with nail biting. And that's always been one of my favorite testimonials. The person that, you know, that said, you should sell your nail biting programs with a warning. And I said, what do you mean by that? Well, you should tell people that they have to buy nail clippers when you're done. Anyway, yeah.
Interesting the changes you have to make when you start improving yourself.
Isn't it so? All right, that's all the time we'll take for letters today. But I do invite you to opine by sending your email to eldon@eldontaylor.com or by joining me on Facebook. We can't get all of your letters on the air, but they do impact our programming. And I thank you for your continued support and feedback. Now to today's show, Life After Death. This is something we dedicated over 20 weeks to investigating right here on Provocative Enlightenment. Indeed, the entire investigation is available free on the internet, and there is a link on my webpage that will take you to it if you missed the live shows. We looked at the subject from the perspective that would apply in a court of law. Beyond a reasonable doubt, the preponderance of evidence. In other words, how would a jury decide the case for life after death? Would a jury conclude that the evidence met the threshold of beyond a reasonable doubt? Okay, that brings us to today's show, The Life After Death Project, a documentary on a timeless theme. This is a fascinating film, a true life enigma that begins with one small, odd incident and mushrooms into a huge scientific investigation of apparent messages from the other side. The film takes us on an investigation of the extraordinary case of after-death communication with sci-fi luminary Forrest J. Ackerman. Uncle Forry, as he is known to some, was a skeptic about life after death, but he promised close friends that if it turned out he was wrong, he would try to drop them a line from the other side. The documentary evidence of what happened has to be seen to be believed, but we'll discuss it some today with the film's producer, Paul Davids. I have to tell you, this film is the best of its kind I have ever seen. You are going to want to watch this film. Paul is from Bethesda, Maryland, and is a graduate of Princeton University, where he majored in psychology and won numerous awards in writing. He then attended the American Film Institute Center for Advanced Film Studies in Beverly Hills and went on to work in film and TV, producing and or directing 9 feature films in the last decade, including Showtime's now classic TV film, Roswell. After a few years working as a script analyst for Hollywood agent Paul Koner, his career in film and television took off when he got his first break as production coordinator and writer of the original Transformers TV show for Marvel Productions. Our sons love the Transformers, don't they? Paul Davids is also a prolific artist whose paintings have been displayed at many galleries. He is a member of the Writers Guild of America and Producers Guild of America. 4 of Paul Davids' films are distributed to TV by NBC's Universal International TV division, including Starry Night, The Sci-Fi Boys, Jesus in India, and Before We Say Goodbye. Information on all of his films and his books and music can be found at Paul Davids, that's PaulDavids.com. So let's get him in here. Welcome to Provocative Enlightenment, Mr. Paul Davids.
Thank you. It's good to be with you today, Eldon.
Good. You know, around here we like to know 3 things. Who is the messenger? What is the message? And how do we use it? So to begin with, please share your story. Just why did you make this film? What gave rise to your interest in the afterlife? And was it provoked by any sort of personal experience?
Well, to start with the last question, it was provoked by personal experience. This was not a topic I have had considered tackling. I've made a lot of films on controversial subjects. I've been very fortunate after the success of Showtime's Roswell, which in itself was very controversial. I've had the luxury of being able to choose subjects of great interest to me that I knew were controversial, that I thought would push the envelope of people's thinking, open minds. And you know, that's how I ended up with Jesus in India as the topic, and I did a film on the LSD proponent Timothy Leary, the Harvard professor who was influential in the 1960s.
Yeah, we're going to have to bring you back just to discuss some of these other films, but I'm sorry, I don't mean to interrupt.
There's been a lot of them, but Life After Death was not a topic for me until a very dear friend and mentor, Forrest J. Ackerman, who I had known for over 40 years, died at age 92. He passed away December 4th, 2008. It's a date etched in my mind. And it took about 3 months before there was a tribute for him, because he had said he was an atheist, not a believer in the afterlife, thought he would be quickly forgotten, didn't want a funeral, didn't want a memorial. And his dear friend, Joe Moe, who had been a caretaker toward the end of his life for many years, said, well, Barry, what about a tribute? You know, but could we have your permission to have a tribute for you? He said, yeah, a tribute, okay. You can have a tribute. So it took about 3 months. It was March 7th, 2009. Egyptian Theater, Hollywood. Every seat filled. People coming from around the world to pay tribute. And why? Why tribute to Forrest J. Ackerman? Here's a man born in 1916. He grew up with the movies. Through the silent era, a forceful proponent of science fiction as a visionary form of literature and film that could take us into the future, open new worlds, new ideas. He was a futurist. And he had a great influence. People maybe know him best as editor of Famous Monsters of Filmland magazine. That started in 1958. Mm-hmm. Captured the spirit of movie monsters and science fiction in a way that kids could understand it. Had a lot of humor. He had a great sense of humor. A lot of fans. And they included everyone, bar none, who is working in the field of science fiction films, imaginative cinema today. You know, including, of course, Lucas and Spielberg and Peter Jackson and Guillermo del Toro. Everyone is on the list of those who felt that Fari was their spiritual uncle. Right. He was like a Pied Piper, and he was to me, too. So along comes the tribute, and that day was the day that strange things started to happen. You said you wanted to know who the messenger was. Well, I'm the messenger through the sense of bringing the film to everyone, but I think the real messenger is Fari Ackerman. Mm-hmm. Because so many things have happened, Eldon, that can't be explained. I've brought scientists into the mix on this. I've been to three universities with some of the evidence of the Fari Ackerman contacts.
Right.
They are baffled. They've examined some of this evidence for 3 years. We've had mediums involved. We have lists of extraordinary synchronicities, and so many of them that you have to turn away from the idea that this is just all coincidence. And most important, I think, is the physical evidence, because against my reluctance, in spite of my own skepticism and my hesitancy to jump to paranormal explanations, something happened to me that just can't be explained that I think was Fari Ackerman dropping me a line, like he said he would do if it turned out he was wrong about life after death.
And almost literally dropping you a line.
Yeah, a line in a document was changed, and it was a message. And that's how it began for me. It began the day of the tribute for others, for two Canadian filmmakers who had made a documentary about his life, Ian Johnston and Mike McDonald. And They had the first experience. They visited his crypt. I mean, it sounds like something out of Twilight Zone. Fari was big on crypts, you know. I mean, he was right. Into science fiction and horror. He owned Bela Lugosi's ring when Lugosi played Dracula.
Right.
And he always made fun with this kind of stuff. So they could playfully go to his crypt on the day of his tribute and knock on the crypt and say, Uncle Fari, we're here. You know, we've come with the movie. We'll be there tonight. And they said that within an hour, they got a knock back from him. And they told us all about it. What happened? You need to see the you know, see the film to get the details. It's the Life After Death Project, and today actually is the very day, Eldon, it comes out nationally. Today is the first day where I can say you can go to any website that sells movies, from Target to Barnes and Noble to Amazon, to name any of them. You can find it, and they are starting to ship today. And at our website, lifeafterdeathproject.com, we'll ship it all around the world.
And well, and I'm going to give you a free plug there. I, as my audience knows, this is a subject that I have done a great deal of research on, and I don't think there's any aspect of it that we haven't looked at, or any expert that we haven't really done some hard interviewing of. And we'll get into taking it apart, but here's my message to everyone listening in. There is nothing that I have ever seen that is as compelling, as interesting, as dramatic as this film. This, if you're interested at all in, is there evidence for life after death, you really want to see this film. And actually, it's, are you shipping it as two CDs, Paul?
Yeah, it's two, because you see, I had so much that was left on the cutting room floor, so many experts,
right,
so many people, so many other cases, that I said that it had to be two movies. So I put together a sequel. The first movie was on Sci-Fi in May. They showed it one time. And then yes, two DVDs plus 40 minutes of bonus materials that include Ray Bradbury at the tribute and Rick Baker. So, altogether, it's well over 4 hours. And I have to say one thing. I have to ask for everybody's support. You know, in as an independent filmmaker, we need the support of our public and those who appreciate our work, or we can't do what we do. And there are pirates out there, international cartels just stealing, no respect for copyright on the Internet. Please don't go there. Those people are—they're doing a great disservice to our field and everyone who works in it. So I ask for your support and think that I'm offering. So I really appreciate your words there, Eldon. I think what a recommendation for you to say it's the best of the best.
Well, and I mean it. It's sincere. All right, now, let's get into some of the specificity of the film, because I think as we can tease out some of the things that are in this film, we're going to even kindle more interest, if you will. The movie opens with a story. Well, there's two movies, so I'm going to jump back and forth.
Yeah.
But it opens with a story of a psychic who reports a murder she has been told about by the deceased. So, I mean, a dead woman has actually come to her and said, and given details. Now, law enforcement is always suspicious of psychics, and even more so when someone comes forward who knows something that they shouldn't know. And I know that, firsthand from my work in law enforcement. So despite that fact, psychics are sometimes still called into cases. I've used them myself. So please tell us about this woman that opened your film and her experience with this deceased murder victim.
Well, that actually, I want to say, opens the sequel. She's
okay.
One of those of the many others who bring forth evidence and testimony. Her name is Marissa Ryan. She didn't become a psychic medium until well into her life. She had been a corporate professional. Two very close relatives died within a week and had a profound impact on her. And it was soon after that that she said that she received her first visit from a spirit who was a murder victim and provided her with information about the murder. So here's someone who had never thought of contacting the police on something like this before. And, of course, she put herself open to their suspicion the moment she called. And it turned out that some of the information she had was accurate information that hadn't been published.
So, yeah, and Paul, I'm going to ask you to hold it there. We'll pick her up when we come back, but the computer's going to kick us out. We have a hard break coming.
Okay.
We're speaking with Paul Davids about his investigation and documentary film, The Life After Death Project. You do want to check this one out. If you're not already in our chat room, now's a great time to join in the conversation. We have a short movie featuring today's subject for you during the break, and you'll want to catch that as well. So be sure to log in to eldontaylor.com/chat. Do stay tuned. You don't want to miss what's coming up after a few words from some of our friends.
Unlock the power of your mind. This is Provocative Enlightenment with Eldon Taylor.
And welcome back. If you just joined us, we're speaking with Paul Davids about his investigation and documentary film, The Life After Death Project. But before we get back to the show, I want to invite you to join me on Facebook as a friend or a fan. I post regularly everything from where I am and what's on next, to the latest in science, technology, and consciousness studies, and from time to time, some of my own opinions about the world we live in. As one of my opinions about the world we live in, you do want to check out this film. I promise you, you will not be disappointed. I also want to remind you to be sure and register to receive my free newsletter when you visit my site and get your free MP3s. All right, before the break, Paul, you were telling us about Marissa Ryan and some evidence that she knew of that no one else would know except law enforcement. And that evidence was?
Giveaway. This was rather grisly. I mean, this was it was an aspect of the crime and the murder that had not been publicized because it was so grisly. I think the main takeaway with Marissa Ryan is this: that here's a person who had not been into psychic experience, whose life changed as a result of this, what she called this initial visitation from a murder victim, that she had the courage to come forward to the police. You know, she was a mother. She provided information that was so specific it actually made her for a while a suspect until the police could rule that out. And I think that took courage and determination. And I think it's just one example of so many where there has been some sort of contact or communication from someone who's departed that propels someone to take that information public and let people know about it, to give the subject matter its maximum credibility.
You know, as far as I'm concerned, that's exactly what that does. It's the kind of anecdotal story that cannot be explained in any other way except by accounting for some level of consciousness that exists beyond the material. Period. End of quotation. I'll allow you the grace of saying it was too gross to describe, and I won't go into that detail. But the fact is, for this woman to have had that knowledge, she was either the perpetrator, which she clearly wasn't, and that was shown by law enforcement, and or she obtained this information in a way that we have no physical, you know, method for explaining.
I was going to say, you know, there are so many different ways to study life after death, and you know this because you've been into it so deeply. But it includes so many different categories of research. I mean, whether you want to talk about reincarnation, whether you want to talk about EVP, which is the electronic voice phenomenon, that comes under ITC.
Right. I'm going to ask you about all of that stuff.
Yeah.
I'm going to ask you individually about some of this because we have interviewed numbers of people, but you fleshed out some information that I found completely novel. I had not encountered it anywhere. Okay. So, I mean, you interviewed John Lermer, and Lermer told you basically about life reviews. That's something that Moody talks about. That's something that everybody talks about.
And Danny and Brinkley, who's in the first film, of course, talks about it.
But one of the things that you discussed that I found really interesting, that no one else has signaled, I shall use that term at this point in time, is that at the crossing over process, it seems to be attenuated by an electrostatic charge. sometimes what appears to be something like a white light or a golden orb. I've never heard that before. I've read Elizabeth Kubler-Ross. I've interviewed a number of hospice experts on this subject. So what could our audience, based on what you learned, what could our audience expect if they were to be attending to a loved one who was crossing over or rising up, as my friend August Goldthorpe would say?
Well, first I would want to caution and say, of course, that many times that there may be nothing extraordinary that is experienced at all, or that sometimes, and I think more frequently, it happens soon after, perhaps the same day, but within hours. What Dr. John Lerma described, he's a palliative care physician who's been with the dying, research on this, helping these people for 15 years, and the nurses that are in the film, who have attended to so many people passing over, they do describe phenomena such as this electrostatic charge, the hair, you know, standing up on your back or on your arms. Sometimes an observation of a light. Sometimes even a light leaving the body and rising. I mean, these are things that have been repeatedly reported, but not always so. You know, I'd like to mention, and I know you saw this toward the end of the sequel film, the case with my own father-in-law, who was in an assisted living home, and when he passed, the person who was closest to him in the home came into the room he had lived in. It was probably about 2 hours after his body had been removed. And he came in, you know, to say goodbye, you know, which is, you know, sort of a passionate thing to do when the person's no longer physically there. And as he expressed his feelings and his sorrow, there was a vase on top of the refrigerator in the room that just leaped off the refrigerator. It's a glass vase. It hit the ground. It didn't break. But he said it was in the middle of the refrigerator, he said it became very cold in the room. And what followed this just shocked him, and that was a phone call from my father-in-law, first on his personal phone, where the name shows up, that the phone call is coming, but there's no voice there, there's no one there. But then on his corporate phone, a few minutes later, another phone call that says it's from my father-in-law. So where is this residual activity, this contact? How are we to... You know, how are we to assess this? How can this even be? There's obviously so much to life and spirit that we don't understand, that we're groping to understand.
Well, let's play with that for a second. We've covered EVP on this show. In fact, we've actually played some of the EVP recordings. We've had multiple shows on EVP. But, you know, tell us about ITC, especially some of the work Gary Schwartz is now doing in Arizona.
This is the trailblazing research. ITC stands for Instrumental Transcommunication.
Right.
The idea is that just as radio waves and television waves and the waves that bring us the internet are all around us, they're all around the atmosphere, they're traveling right through our very bodies. The only way we can detect these signals, or we wouldn't even know that they exist, is to have a device that tunes in to that channel, to that frequency. The theory is that the spirit world exists all around us. It's not something far away, but that deceased loved ones, people we knew, that you know we think of them, and that the presence is near. And that in order to pick up the signals and pick up the communication, sometimes that it could be done using our own technological equipment. Now, you mentioned Gary Schwartz.
Right.
Dr. Gary Schwartz, University of Arizona, Tucson, wonderful author. Look for some of his books, like The God Experiments and The Sacred Promise.
Right.
He's a graduate of Harvard. He was a professor at Harvard, professor at Yale, then went to University of Arizona, Tucson. His work in research of life after death has been supported through the university for over 15 years. He began working with mediums, looking for those who are the best, who are the ones that really have the gift, and discard the others. And then he began working with technology, ITC, and he's developed computer software, which is absolutely fascinating, purportedly to help him communicate with deceased spirits. Now, in my film, the cameras go into his lab, and he attempts communication with Forrest J. Ackerman, you know, who my case is about.
Right.
And you see the evidence in the film. The communication is clearly taking place. You have to see what leads up to it and how when he speaks to Fari, he asks for an identifier. The identifier is 3 on his bar graph. It refers to the intensity of the change of radiation level through the communication that's actually being measured, and you see it on the screen. And as he asks Fari a series of questions, when the bar graph comes up as 3 in response to some of these questions, it's not chance. It's not just noise in the system. That's already been figured out and filtered out. But it implies that there is some source for these answers.
Yeah.
And this is where my main interest lies, because while you can study, you know, EVP, reincarnation, near-death experience, all these different aspects, my main interest and the main focus in the Life After Death Project is ADC, after-death communication, reaching a contact with someone who has passed, because I think that's what happened. Through no desire of my own, I didn't ask for it, I didn't expect it, but that's what happened to me in the case of Fari Ackerman.
So your mentor came to you and said, okay, I was wrong, there is life after death, and now your mission is to tell everyone else. Have I got that pretty right?
Yeah, it was an assignment, and it continued for 4 years making the film. And some of the things that happened just as the film was coming out, you know, make me think that my mentor gave me an A+.
I would definitely give you an A+. That said, there are some things that I'm going to ask you about that I think are just, I mean, there were weak spots in the combined. There's two films. We're talking about two films. You've got the film and you've got the sequel. So our audience understands when you get this, you will receive 2 DVDs. And I'm not always asking you a question by referencing in the sequel or in the film.
Yeah.
I'm treating them as though they're one film.
Okay.
All right. In 1901, McDougall weighed 6 patients while they were in the process of dying from tuberculosis.
Yeah.
And would he, you know, I mean, we have a meme in the consciousness of our culture today that essentially argues that, you know, you lose weight at the moment you die because his measurements indicated a 0.5 ounce of weight was lost at the time of death. Now, science, of course, scoffs at that, both in the methodology and the findings and so forth. The fact that this was in your film rather puzzled me because there are so many, here they are, just hard, irrefutable. It was kind of like, you know, I don't know, you forgot to get the grease out from under a fingernail
at a
formal tux dinner. Tell me.
No. To be fair, it was a comment reported by Dr. Claude Swanson.
Right, right.
And Claude Swanson was reviewing some of the kinds of evidence that have been put forward. And he mentions that as something that has been put forward, not as fact, but he does say there was experimentation with it. Now, he doesn't go into detail of what the critiques might have been of that experimentation. But Swanson, who's a PhD and from Princeton, wrote an extraordinary book called The Synchronized Universe, in which he deals with all kinds of anomalies in our world and in physics, and claims of anomalies, some that may not have been proven, but uses the claims and the evidence to try to weave together a picture and theories where he can bring physics to attempt to explain some of the phenomena that we're seeing. So it's not something I'm saying in the film. It's a point that Claude Swanson raised in his own argument about some of the interesting things that have been tackled.
That takes me to this, you know.
Yeah.
You know what a confirmation bias is. And not, we think of, I'm just going to, a BS. We all know what BS is.
Mm-hmm.
And then an
Bachelor
MS.
Of Science.
Well, we say that's just more of the BS.
Uh-huh.
And then a PhD is pilot higher and deeper.
Okay.
And very often, because someone has a degree, we give them credibility. When indeed, that doesn't necessarily imply that they should have it. We have many PhDs in institutions of all kinds.
Yep.
So you had Michael Shermer on your show, and I recently interviewed Michael. And we talked about his books, Why People Believe Weird Things and The Believing Brain. Now, as you know, Shermer is a well-known agnostic who challenges many so-called New Age views. And we found him to be bright, informed, cordial, and most reasonable. He does offer explanations for why folks want to believe the things like life after death, and he does concede that some things are inherently unprovable. His bottom line message to us came down to, live a life of service to your fellow human being. Do your best efforts to improve the quality of life we live in. Now, you have him in your film, and he essentially does a pretty good cleanup job at indicating when the time comes that we do communicate, say, as with ITC, with the other side on a regular basis. I believe his words are something like that will become chapter 18 in the science book, how we do that.
Exactly.
My question here, is kind of twofold. When you have someone who gives you evidence that is, the kind of evidence that science normally just discards, and then you turn and you put a Shermer on and you keep him confined to that part of his interview which gives credibility, is that fair as a filmmaker? I mean, this is Provocative Enlightenment. I have to ask you that. I've already endorsed your film.
Absolutely. I'm glad you asked that, because Michael Shermer was not able, cannot explain any of the anomalies that we bring forth in the film. And he admits that weird things sometimes happen to people. They can't be explained, but he wants to put them all in the gray basket and not deal with them. And I think that's exactly 100% wrong, that it's these anomalies that are the most important clues to where our progress is going to be in the future in this whole field. Now, I know Michael Shermer. He's in my film, and we had lunch together recently. It went on for 2 hours, and we talked about everything in the movie. I know he's going to be writing about it, actually, probably fairly extensively. But, I've read The Believing Brain, and I've read Why People Believe Weird Things. And one of his arguments about the, what is the word, the bias that you use? The
confirmation
the
bias.
The confirmation bias, yeah.
Right.
And if you have a predisposition to believe something, you're going to grasp for everything that you see as being evidence of it.
That's
for
right.
For example, it's reasonable to say that if somebody is deeply religious and they have a very strong belief in God, and they're lying on the ground at a picnic and looking up at the sky and they see a cloud and it just looks perfectly like an angel, that person is going to be much more likely to interpret that as an angel and a sign than a meteorologist would, who would say, wait a minute, it's moisture in the air. It can take any shape,
That's
just happens
Amen.
To be. So, but one of the things that I think I show very clearly in this movie is that Shermer's argument that so much of this material comes from people that already have a belief and therefore they dig up the evidence or they interpret everything in the world around them as confirming is not true. So much of this is happening to people who have had no clue about this, who have had no interest. Something comes along that shocks you in your life. This was the case with me. I wasn't looking for it. I didn't seek it. Society for Psychical Research in London mm-hmm. has just published a marvelous and very, very long detailed review about the Life After Death Project. But they put in there that one thing that, as they review everything, is that how can we be sure that this inkblot, wasn't a hoax from Paul Davids. And I want everyone to hear from me. No hoax. Nothing invented. Nothing contrived. Not Blair Witch Project. Not the fourth kind. What I'm doing here is it's a confession. I'm bringing this forward for science. I went to universities. I went to science after this happened. I'm giving it to the world because it's true, not because it has anything to do I get accused of exploitation. You know, the subject sounds tabloid. No. This is an honest confession, and take it that way. I mean it.
And the chemistry has actually been examined of the document, and no one, is able to replicate it. Is that correct?
That's absolutely correct. And the scientists I went to are the top in the world. One skeptic says to me, well, what do you go to these university professors for? What do they know? Why didn't you go to the FBI? It happened in your house when you were alone. There was no one else there. That sounds like a
crime. Because the FBI would take it to the university
FBI would take it to the men that I went to. I went to Dr. Jay Siegel, chairman of the chemistry department, University of Indiana, forensic chemist, testified in many, many court cases where chemistry is at issue. He's the expert in paints, inks, solvents, and so is Dr. John Allison of the College of New Jersey. I went to the right people. They took 3 years. It baffled them. It bothered them. They can't reproduce it. They tried every solvent they could possibly think of. And they said to me, look, Paul, you may have been a suspect when you came in here, because anybody who comes in with a story is a suspect. But you couldn't have done it even if you'd wanted to do it. We can't figure out how to do it, how it could have been done. And that's the reason I turned it into a movie, because if these scientists had shot this down, I wouldn't have taken it any further. That would have been the end of it.
Right. You know, the bottom line is everyone needs to see this film because we're not able to even really cover the tip of the iceberg of some of the physical evidence you've got packed into this story, period. End of quotation. We only have a couple of minutes left. I'm going to ask you a question, but before I do, I want everyone to know again how to get the movie. Give them the website, your website. Tell them precisely where you want them to go.
We are lifeafterdeathproject.com, and we ship the DVD all around the world. In fairness, you may find it at less than a retail price. You will. Today is the day it comes out everywhere. So whether you go to Amazon or Barnes & Noble or Target or any consumer outlet that you can name for DVDs, you'll find it online. And I urge you to pick up a copy. I'm sure you'll be happy that you did.
I am too. All right, last question. You've got about 1 minute to give it up.
Okay.
One of the areas common to past life research, to afterlife, is reincarnation. And there have been a lot of hoaxes there, like the Bridie Murphy story. What did you find to be the most compelling evidence that you stumbled across or tracked down for reincarnation?
Well, I didn't research reincarnation in this film. I felt reincarnation would take an entire film by itself. There is a massive body of research on reincarnation, so much literature, so many books, that we mention it briefly as a topic in the sequel as one of those areas that demands further research. With an expert in reincarnation.
And actually, I think Gary mentions it as one of his four.
No, Gary doesn't say reincarnation. No, Gary says physical evidence, synchronicities, mediums, and instrumental transcommunication.
You're right.
Those are
it
his
isn't
form.
Gary that does. You're right. You've got me, but we're out of time. I'm going to have to run on that one. You do want to catch this film. I'm sorry we've come to the end of an hour of Provocative Enlightenment. I want to thank our behind-the-scenes team, Kyle and Joe, as well as the rest of the gang at Hay House Radio for making what we do on this show so pleasurable. And, of course, a big thank you to our guest and to all of you for joining us today. I hope you enjoyed our show and will join us again next week, same time and same place. Until then, remember, believing in yourself always matters.